Are we live? There we go. If you'll take your seats, we're going to call this meeting to order. Higher Education Appropriations Subcommittee will come to order. Ms. Pilcher, please call the roll.
Chair Schoaf.
Here.
Vice Chair Hawkins.
Here.
Ranking Member Benjamin.
Present.
Representatives Anderson excused. Baker.
Here.
Caruso.
Here.
Chambliss.
Here.
Cross.
Here.
Daniels.
Here.
Franklin. Garcia.
Here.
Griffiths.
Yes, ma'am.
Maggard.
Here.
Juarez.
Here.
Rudman.
Here.
A quorum is present, Mr. Chair.
Thank you much. A quorum being present, I want to welcome everyone today to the Higher Education Appropriations Subcommittee. Please make sure your cell phones and other devices are turned off or left outside the room, please. Today we will be hearing a presentation from the Department of Education on the various workforce education programs in the higher education budget. Florida has been making great strides in recent years in advancing and expanding the career and adult education programs available to its post-secondary education students. Florida's workforce education programs provide our students who may or may not be college-bound with the opportunities to prepare for and pursue careers in technical and vocational fields. These important programs aim to ensure that Florida students are prepared to fill the high-demand, high-wage jobs of today and tomorrow. Today we have Kevin O'Farrell. He's the Chancellor of the Division of Career and Adult Education. To present, Mr. O'Farrell, you are recognized, and thank you for being here today.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, committee. It's a privilege to be with you all this afternoon. And let me start by wishing each of you a very happy CTE month, because February is CTE month, and we are recognizing career and technical adult education across the state. And we're really kind of excited. I just want to give a quick little overview of that. We've got some record enrollments in CTE in the post-secondary sector, approximately 380,000 students. When you look at the secondary sector, we have a record 800,000 students participating in CTE. And when you think about the 17,000 plus apprentices and pre-apprentices, you add all that together, we've got about 1.2 million students who are involved in workforce training and education. So a lot to really be thankful for and excited about. And thankful again for the legislature, for the House, for your efforts in advancing CTE across the state. So happy CTE month. And I guess it's Valentine's Day too, right? So. This morning, or this afternoon, I want to be able to share with you a little bit more in depth. I was with you previously in January, where we gave you an overview of the performance funding that we have in the Florida College System and also the technical colleges and technical centers. But today, we're going to give you a little bit more in-depth view of what all the funding opportunities and funding programs are across all of our workforce programs. And so what I'm going to do this morning or this afternoon is I'm going to give you a little bit of an overview of our enrollments, take a look at our completions, and then we'll have a nice lengthy discussion in terms of our funding options as well. One thing I want you to also keep in mind, too, is just as a reminder, in the state of Florida, we have 45 technical colleges and technical centers. We have 28 Florida College System institutions, and we have 55 school districts and about 12 Florida College institutions that offer some form of adult education programming as well. So that gives you a quick little thumbnail sketch of where our workforce programs are across the state. I think that one went a little bit too. Right. So the first slide that I want to share with you on are our workforce education enrollment numbers by sector. And I want to talk a little bit about these particular credentials and certificates and what they mean as we go forward in this particular presentation. You'll notice that for this graph, the blue bar represents the Florida College System institution and the green bar represents the school districts, because I want to give you just an idea of, you know, who is providing what in regards to this. So this kind of gives you an idea, just a quick snapshot for enrollment. So our first credential certificate is the Associate in Science, the AS degrees, or the AAS, which is the Associate of Applied Science degrees. And these are offered exclusively at our Florida College System institutions. And these are two-year degrees that prepare students for careers requiring a technical degree. So you might think of like an RN in nursing or an AS in cybersecurity. The college credit certificate also prepares students for employment, but it's training less than an AS degree, and often these college credit certificates are embedded within the AS or the AAS program. Our apprenticeship program, which we're going to spend some time talking about when we get onto PCOG, is also our employer-driven training, which allows apprentices to be employed, and then also while they are earning, they are also learning. That's the earn while you learn model. And this has been tremendously successful. And you see that most of the apprenticeship and pre-apprenticeship enrollment activity is happening in our school districts area. Our career certificates are clock hour programs that prepare students for employment in a specific field. So again, here you might think about law enforcement or the practical nursing program, a clock hour program. Our applied technology diplomas provide students with an opportunity, again, for employment within a particular field, but they can also articulate into an AS degree program. So a good example of this might be like dental assisting. Our advanced technical degrees are degrees that typically students who already have an AS degree or they have a baccalaureate degree will come back for specialized training. And this specialized training will help them in their particular field or industry. So those are, again, offered exclusively with our Florida College System institutions. And then finally, we have our adult general education. And adult general education primarily offered through our school districts, but we also have in the Florida College System those who participate in providing that as well. And adult education provides students who are at least, they have to be 16 years of age. They have to not be required or enrolled in a high school. They must not already have a high school diploma or equivalency, or they want to learn English as a language to be enrolled in one of our adult education programs. So we have, of course, the adult basic education, which is everything below ninth grade. We have our GED and high school equivalency, which is everything that would be equivalent from high school experience. And then, of course, we have our ESOL programming. And our students who are enrolled in ESOL can be a variety. You can have some students who are wanting to gain basic literacy in English, or you may have individuals who have immigrated into the United States. They may have technical competencies, but they may not have the technical fluency in English that they're looking for. So there's a broad range there in ESOL as well. This next chart here shows you our completions by sectors for those various credentials and degrees that I just mentioned before. And so again, it gives you a nice kind of takeaway with the blue bars again being the completions that take place in the Florida College System institutions and the green bars being at the school districts. And what you can see from this particular chart is that for the last 5 years, I want you to know that we have seen an increase in completions by 5% in our workforce education program. And training opportunities. And this represents right here about 78,472 completers for the 2021-2022 school year. I also want to talk about the number of industry certifications we have by sector and for year. And so you'll often hear the term CAPE, right, which is our Career and Professional Education Act. And so there are credentials that are on our CAPE list in which local LEAs can receive funding for the amount of fundable certifications that are earned by students in a particular year. And so this chart before you shows all of the CAPE industry certifications that have been earned, again, in the Florida College System in the school district. The blue bar represents the Florida College System institutions production, and the school districts are represented by the green bar there. And you'll see since 2013-2014, we've seen a remarkable increase in terms of the fundable certifications. There was a high for the Florida College System in 2020-2021 of 14,922. And we actually have the data, which is not on this chart, which is the most recent for the school districts for what is the 22-23 school year, with them earning about 7,918 fundable certifications as well. The Florida College System, you'll notice, let me back up. You'll notice there on the 2017-2018 bar that there's no green. That was 1 year the legislature chose not to fund certifications for post-secondary technical colleges and technical centers, so it lags our data. So the data that we have for the Florida College System institution will come out in June of this year, so we'll see what the total fundable certifications are for them. All right, so let's talk a little bit about our funding sources. This table is a nice little cheat sheet for you that kind of shows you by sector and by funding source who is eligible to receive funds relevant to that particular funding source. And I'm going to go through these in detail so that you'll be able to understand some of these funding metrics and also the performance of these programs. And then in the end, I'm going to share with you particularly about two new programs that have been in the governor's budget request, and that is for performance-based incentives in adult education programming, and then also for our technologists and tech centers as well. So this graph represents the district funding sources for the technical centers and technical colleges. Approximately $390 million are in the workforce development funds. And I also want to mention, too, that in the governor's recommended budget that we'll see an increase in this as well so that we can have all of our tech centers and tech colleges fully funded at 100%. Currently, there are 35 school districts that have less than 100% funding and about an additional 11 that have less than about 84% funding. So there is an increase in the governor's budget to have these fully funded for the next year. Tuition and fees generate about $40.2 million for our tech colleges and tech centers. And also, as you remember the chart before, when it comes to the funding sources and the development and production of adult education, that is funded primarily through our WIOA Title II allocation, which is a competition, and that's about $33.3 million that are available to our tech centers and tech colleges for that. Pipeline, which is our program that rewards student performance in our nursing programs, and for our tech colleges and tech centers, that would be primarily in the practical nursing, since it's a clock hour program that's offered there. There's $20 million available. And then in our Formula Perkins allocation, which is an aid to districts, it's about $6.9 million that is available to our districts and tech, our district tech colleges and tech centers. And then, of course, the $6.5 million for the CAPE industry certification earns that are each year. Our Florida College System Institution, these are our funding sources for this particular sector. And you can see we have about $1.3 billion for our program funds. We also have $690.1 million for tuition and fees. Again, pipeline is also available for our Florida College System institutions. There's $40 million that are appropriated for that, which includes not only those institutions that offer the PN program, but also those that offer the RN program. And in fact, all of our 28 Florida College institutions offer the RN in nursing. We also have $23.8 million in our Perkins formula that's aid to district. And then the $20 million, as well as the $10 million, that's combined together. That's the $30 million for the performance funding that I shared with you previously about when I was here in January. And so those are broken down into the 2+2 student success funds and then also the Work Florida Student Success Incentive Funds. There are also $14 million for industry certification, again, for CAPE. This year, as I'll mention a little bit later, the governor's recommended budget is for an increase in this for the Florida College System institutions for an additional $6 million for $20 million. And then again, there's approximately $9.9 million available in the WIOA Title II adult education funds as well. So looking at the industry certifications for the CAPE Act, statutorily, the CAPE industry certifications can be funded at $1,000 per certification. But for the districts, when there are more certifications that are earned than there are funds available, it's prorated. So this resulted in last year, the 2022-2023 year, of the districts receiving about $821 per fundable certification. That was, again, about 7,918 certifications that were earned in the Florida College System, or excuse me, in the district post-secondary workforce, or our tech colleges and tech centers. And for our Florida College System institutions, there's $20 million that's available for that. Again, as I mentioned, that's a $6 million increase for those certifications. We're very excited to see, you know, when you look at the overall performance and you see how this has really been transformative in the terms of moving more individuals into getting to these CAPE industry certifications, these credentials that give them great employability. Two of the programs that I mentioned before, but just want to give you some additional context on, again, is the Pipeline, which is the Prepping Institutions Programs, Employers, and Learners through Incentives for Nursing Education. This, again, is a program that particularly looks at improving or rewarding, I should say, institutions for their work in the performance of producing nursing graduates. And so it looks at a couple of different metrics, one of those being the number of nursing education programs by completers. It also looks at the first-time NCLEX passage rate for nurses, and that is, again, by program. And then it creates what is known as an excellence category, which takes the nursing education program NCLEX passage rates and looks at it as terms of those that exceeded the national average. So to give you an idea of that, for the NCLEX RN, the national passage rate for that particular exam is 82.8%. And we had 22 Florida College System institutions that exceeded that national average. For the PN, the practical nursing, the average NCLEX passage rate is 83.08%. And with that, we had 8 Florida College System institutions and 11 technical colleges exceed that national passage rate. So they receive additional funds with that as well, part of that formulaic calculation. For LINE, which is Linking Industry to Nursing Education Fund, this is a grant program that provides a dollar-for-dollar match. So when a post-secondary institution partners with a healthcare provider, they can submit an application for having a dollar-for-dollar match of which the healthcare provider has put up the initial funds for that. So in this last year, we had 26 institutions that partnered with 30 healthcare providers. And that was includes in that 16 Florida College System institutions, 8 ICUF institutions, 1 CIE institution, and 1 school district. And the medium award was approximately $292,500, with the minimum award being around $11,290, and the maximum award being about $6.7 million. And we know from the applications that the nursing, the LEAs will be using most of these funds for basically 3 large bucket areas. One will be on equipment, the second will be on improvements to their nursing simulation centers, and the third will be on student scholarships. Our Pathways to Career Opportunity Grant, or PCOG, again, is our main and primary way that we fund apprenticeship expansion and new apprenticeship and pre-apprenticeship programs here in the state of Florida. And this is really kind of a reversed engineer, employer-driven method of training in which the majority of the learning takes place on the job. And this has been a very successful program for us. In fact, we have seen just this last year the ability to create 42 new additional apprenticeship or pre-apprenticeship programs serving about 3,225 apprentices and pre-apprentices. We do know that when you go through an apprenticeship program, 93% of the registered apprentices stay with the employer that trained them. So it becomes a really strong way for employers to attract, get that talent, and retain that talent. I can tell you that just as of yesterday, I checked our numbers for the number of active registered apprenticeships that we have, and we have 292 active registered apprenticeships, and 34 active pre-apprenticeships. And when you look at what we've done since 2019, we have added an additional 159 apprenticeship or pre-apprenticeship programs here in the state of Florida. So lots to be excited about in there. You'll notice that for this year, the governor's recommended budget has included an additional $5 million for a total of $20 million for PCOG. That additional $5 million will be allocated for the development of a pre-apprenticeship program, which will allow individuals who have at least probably 60 credits, an associate's degree, to be able to be in an apprenticeship program employed by the school district to receive the related technical instruction from an RTI that will result in the conferring of a baccalaureate degree in education and then guaranteed employment with the school district as a school teacher. So we're excited about that right now. A couple of things I want to point out about apprenticeships is that Florida Statute 100925 prohibits the assessment of fees and tuition for apprentices. So apprentices are not being assessed any tuition when they go through the related technical instruction. And so with that, there is nothing in statute that establishes a fee structure or tuition structure for apprenticeships or pre-apprenticeships. Looking at the most recent year for 2022-2023, I wanted to kind of give you an idea of the breakdown of who's actually been taking advantage or been awarded PCOG funds. So we had 17 school districts that were awarded funds for PCOG, and that makes up about 34% of the total awards for a total of about $3.4 million, and that's about 20% of the total award funds that were available for PCOG. We had 11 Florida College System institutions that were awarded, making up about 22% of the awardees for a total of $5.8 million, which represents about 35.5% of the award amount. And then we had 22 employers or industry sponsors that were awarded funds for PCOG. That makes up about 44% of all the awardees for a total of $7.3 million, or a combined 44% of the total grant. In looking at the particular breakdown that we have, so you're kind of wondering, okay, they received this money, right? So what are they spending this money on? What does that break down? And there's a few areas there. The first is there are funds that are associated with related technical instruction, and about 40% of the awards in 2022-2023 went to cover RTI. So we're talking about curriculum, instructional support. 38% went towards equipment purchases for the apprenticeship program or pre-apprenticeship program, 6% towards operating costs, and about 9% for outreach. The average RTI for all of the apprenticeships and pre-apprenticeship programs is on average about $132,000 per grantee. But when we look at the employer and we look at the industry sponsors, which again for this last year made up about 44% of the awardees and about 44% of the actual total financial award too, we can also look at apprenticeships that are what we call unionized and non-unionized, or what is joint or non-joint. So if you are a joint, you are unionized. If you're non-joint, you are non-union, and about 94% were awarded to non-joint apprenticeship programs. And if you think about those particular numbers that I shared for this last year, they mirror the year before too. Where I will say that we've seen some increases has been in the amount of the awards in the Florida College System institutions. So where we had this year we have 11, last year we had 6, so we almost doubled the in total number. But we had about the same number of school districts, 15 to 17, and we also had about the same number of employers from about 22 to 21. So those have stayed kind of consistent in that area. As well as when you take the breakdown between those particular budget areas in terms of the RTI, the equipment, the operating costs, very similar. RTI was about 35%, equipment 34%, a little bit higher in operating expenses at 13%, but a little bit lower in outreach at 6%. And again, looking at the joint versus the non-joint in terms of apprenticeship programs, it was about the same, about 93% being non-union, non-joint. The next program that I want to talk a little bit about is our Open Door Grant Program. And so for this particular program, again, in the governor's recommended budget, we're looking at $10 million for our district post-secondary workforce, and we're looking at $15 million for the Florida College System institution. Now, Open Door was established to provide students with access to short-term, high-demand career and technical education credential and certificate programs. And under current law, Open Door is designed to exclusively cover the costs of the student's attendance. Okay, so that either is in the student investment option or the last dollar option. For 21-22, we had approximately $1.1 million that's been expended, and that has been a significant underperformance of this particular program. And there are several reasons that we have been looking at to see why there's been this underperformance, and I also want to share with you some of the steps that are being taken to hopefully improve the performance of this program as we move forward. The first is that Open Door is tied to our Master Credential List, our MCL, meaning that students can only pursue programs that are listed on the particular MCL. And previous versions of the MCL have been limited in the number of programs and the program length that students would be able to have access to. We also know that some institutions do not particularly offer a lot of clock hour programs. And so because there are a lack of clock hour programs for them to offer, it kind of limits the pool that they would specifically target students to be involved in this Open Door program for those short-term credentials. For fall of this year, 2022, we had a rule change that allowed for the raising of the threshold of our clock hour program. So now we do have a larger amount of programs that are offered at a higher rate that could be eligible for Open Door. So we raised that to 1,350 hours. And I can also share with you, too, that most recently of last week, the Credentials Review Committee, which is charged with developing the Master Credential List, just approved additional credentials to be added to the 2022-2023 list. And so we are excited about that. Particularly, one of the credentials that I want to highlight has been the Class A license for commercial driving. And we've received a lot of feedback from our partners that having this credential on the MCL, really it becomes a game changer for the access and use of Open Door funds. And so we anticipate that being a huge investment. As you all know, the truck driving shortage and logistics and transportation has been a huge focus of the governor's administration and what the legislature has looked at. And so we really believe that this can be a particular game changer for how Open Door funds are accessed moving forward. Another challenge that we've heard from the field has been the frustration over the complexities of really implementing the student investment option of Open Door. Agencies typically felt less interested in the student investment grant where a student pays a third of the tuition and the institution can recoup two-thirds of that upon completion of the program and the industry certification associated with it. And so what we did see was a statutory change in 2022-2023 that really expanded the provision that allowed for agencies to cover the students one-third of the cost of the program. So we're hoping that this will also continue to increase the access and the use of that. Related to that is the challenge that because this particular grant program functions as a scholarship program, institutions are not able to use the or count or have administrative fees to operate and manage the program. And so that becomes a deterrent for them because it becomes a scholarship program. And when students are signing agreements that they will return one-third if they don't complete and track and follow those, it becomes a little bit difficult for them to implement. So the lack of that administrative support or student support has been a challenge for them utilizing this particular program as well. We also had additional statutory changes that I think are positive for this particular program in 2022-2023, the first of which was to expand the definition of institution, which means that if there is a particular school district that does not have a technical center or a technical college in it, but it offers an IET program, which is an integrated education and training program, that they would be able to access Open Door funds. The IET programs are exclusively what we use with our adult education programming. So what this allows is a student who's enrolled in a GED program can be simultaneously enrolled in a CTE program and can be moving towards getting that GED and at the same time moving forward to getting a credential that will allow them employability beyond. So including that, we think definitely opens up that access. And we also had the removal of the stipulation that students had to complete the FAFSA form in order to participate in Open Door. So removing that removes another barrier that students may not have to use and then have access to these scholarship funds as well. I want to talk a little bit about where we're at currently with Open Door, knowing that we've seen the changes in the 2022 GAA, and then look at the review periods that we have, so you're up to date on that. We had basically, in 2022, the legislation changed to move Open Door from a federally funded CARES program to a general revenue program. And so with that, we had two review windows that opened up. Our first one was to give priority to agencies that already had applications on file with us to make the transition into the new GR-funded program. And the second period was for agencies that wanted additional funds to add themselves to the program or to increase their funds overall. So for the 2022-2023 award period, we have 22 Florida College System institutions that have received an allocation. And three of the institutions that had awards in the previous year in 2021-2022 opted not to apply for that. And in round two for the RFA, we had three colleges that requested additional funds. Also for 2022-2023, we had 17 school districts that were operating a post-secondary program or an IET program that received an allocation. In round two, we had six institutions that applied for funds, and we had one that had a request for new funds and five that were awarded additional funds. And we still have award letters pending for those institutions. So when we look at the unallocated funds for 2022-2023, it's going to be about $6.5 million for the Florida College System institutions and about $5.5 million for the school district. So this year, we're not requesting as much funds as we did previously. Again, in the governor's recommendation budget, it's $10 million for district post-secondary workforce, and it's $15 million for the Florida College System. But again, we're hoping that these changes and these additions in the MCL will really boost the utility of this program overall. And then finally, I want to talk about the two new performance programs that are in the governor's budget for 2023-2024. The first one addresses the adult general education performance funding. And this is going to be for $5 million. And again, we have approximately 139,000 students that are involved in adult education in some capacity. And those are represented by 55 school districts and 12 Florida College System institutions that are providers. And the measures that we're looking for that are under development right now are focused around the following. The first is looking at the local need served by the program. So being able to provide providers within their district a total number of the eligible adults who would be in need of adult basic education, and then how many of those students are being, or those individuals are being served by that particular institution or provider. Looking at the overall success of students in adult education, so looking at pre and post tests and how performance is, looking at attainment, skill acquisition will be involved in that. Diploma attainment, again, the GED or the high school equivalency. And then again, looking at our integrated education and training programs, our INT, our IET. So we are looking at participation and completion and certifications that are earned. And then also looking at education and job placement rates as well. So if students complete adult education, they move on to continue their education, or they go straight into the workforce, tracking those students as well. And then our final request is for the Student Success in Career and Technical Education Incentive Funds. And this, again, will be for about $5 million. And this will be new for the Florida Technical Colleges and Technical Centers, but very similar to the performance funding that is included with the Florida College Systems when we talk about Work Florida. And so the metrics that we're looking for in this particular area will be similar to what we look in the Florida College System for the Work Florida. So we'll be looking at completions, again, looking at job placements or continuing education. We'll be looking at their completer wages and also talking about their employment in specific high demand fields as well. So those are the metrics that we're under discussion and development right now for this particular program. And with that, Mr. Chairman, that concludes my presentation.
Thank you, Chancellor. I sure appreciate that. I especially appreciate you taking time to go into depth on the Open Door Grant Program. That was very informative. Members, I'll now open it up for questions. Representative Cross.
Thank you, Chancellor, and happy CTE month to you as well.
Thank you.
Lots of information there. This is something, an area that I'm really interested in. So if I could be recognized for a few questions.
Absolutely, go ahead.
Excellent. I wanted to talk first about the apprenticeships and commend you on starting to increase the completion rate for that. But when I did a little math, it looked like enrollments, when you combined the Florida College System and the school districts, started at almost 13,000, but that the completion was just over 1,600. So that's only about a 13% completion rate. I've toured one of the local career tech schools in my district, Pinellas Technical College, they mentioned to me that once students get to a certain level of proficiency and can start earning wages, that they're tempted to go out and start working, but it may cap how much they can end up earning in some of those careers. Can you talk about some of the reasons why students may not be completing these apprenticeships fully?
You're recognized.
That's a good question. I'd have to look into that because with the apprenticeship program, they are employees of the employer. So they are receiving their on-the-job training at their place of employment, and they are receiving the related technical instruction. Now, in terms of their completion, sometimes, depending on the nature of the apprenticeship, it could be, you know, it has to be at least 2,000 hours. So we'd have to kind of take a look at the particular apprenticeship program as to when they're in or out of that to see when they're actually completing and finishing that. Mm-hmm. But to your comment, which I'd like to maybe dig in a little bit more about, sometimes you will have individuals like in some HVAC programs, which I've heard the same kind of statements as well, that when they receive a certain level of proficiency, now this would be outside of apprenticeship in a different program, that there are opportunities where they are in so demand that employers will begin to take them and give them job opportunities outside of that. So, which would pull the student out of the program and they would not be a completer, but they are being employed. So we have heard that as well, and that is a demand on the industry that exists.
Okay, thank you. Looking at, so trying to understand kind of these funding silos with the school districts, first of all, the $390.4 million in workforce funding, you mentioned that this year the governor's is looking to fully fund that. What does that mean in terms of a dollar amount this year?
Yeah, so Mr. Chair, it's all right for me to...
Yes, please.
Okay. That would be we're looking for an additional, we've put in there for about $20.2 million to fully fund that when we run the calculation. It may actually be an increase on that too based on current or data that we have. So that is a result of the legislative decision to do the funding allocation. But that would be our goal. That's in the governor's budget. It's been part of the Department of Education's LBR as well.
Okay. And with the school districts, how is that money separated from the K through 12 budget? Is it a separate source of funding? And with that in mind, would it be subject to any changes in K through 12 funding?
Yeah. No, that is delegated to the school districts, and those are provided to the tech colleges and tech centers that are under their authority. So it's not mixed with other funding streams.
Got it. Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Oh, great questions. Who's next? Yes, Representative, you are recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for this amazing presentation. Just one quick question in regards to the nursing education, the pipeline, and the line funding. Are these programs available for for-profit nursing institutions or just Florida College System?
Good question. For pipeline, it is specifically for our Florida College System institutions and our district post-secondary programs. For the line, there is eligibility for institutions that are ICUF, CIE, school districts, and also the Florida College System and the district workforce institutions as well.
All right. Do we have anyone else? Representative Magrin.
Thank you, Chair. I've got a couple, depending on how he answers.
Fire away.
I may just quit after the first one. Going back to Representative Cross's line of questioning, and I got to put this in my perspective. So you got six silos, and I assume, as I understand the state, we have a stat like baseball for everything. When you look at those six columns, I mean, it's pretty obvious that the blue ones, our return on our investments, really good there. I mean, our numbers are good. We get to the green, and the numbers really die, right? So when you take the adult ed, it had 113,777 applied and only 5,197 completed the course. Do you look at that? I assume – let me back up. I assume there's a dollar figure for each of those columns it cost us to get those adults to the second phase of where they completed. Do you look at each of those and say, well, my cost for the AA is I got 109,000, 15,000 graduated. I guess that ain't much better. and I've got X amount of dollars invested in that student. I go to adult education, I have $113,000, but I only produce $5,000, and my cost is X, and say, wow, I got a problem here. You know, I'm spending all this money for 113,000 people, and we're nowhere near that. You know, if that makes sense to my question.
You recognize.
Yeah. Could you tell me, Representative, which slide you're referring
to
so I can.
2 and 3.
2 and 3?
Yeah, sorry. Okay. So just take adult ed there, the last one. Maybe I'm reading this wrong. So if you take the last one of the adult ed, it's by this school district enrolled 113,777 students.
Mm-hmm.
When you go down to slide number 3, it says completion is 5,197. So I assume you have a number that says, okay, I spent this amount of dollar per student to achieve that, right? Do you look at that and say, wow, I'm not really getting a return on my investment? That's not the right word of looking. But I'm spending a lot of money here to only graduate so many or get so many involved compared to the blue.
Yeah. Yeah, so good question. So with adult education, there's a variety of outcomes, and it's a little bit difficult when we try to have completers in adult education. So what I will say, when we have 139,000 individuals involved in adult education, the majority of that is actually in the ESOL programming. And so ESOL doesn't actually have a completion component to it. Really, they can stay in ESOL as long as they need to in order to achieve the level of proficiency that they're looking for, whereas obviously in a GED program, you know, we're looking at actual completers, those who have earned a particular program. But to your point, there are several institutions that have looked at and said that, you know, because of the cost of adult education tuition and fees being so low in the state of Florida, you know, it's only about $90 a year, that it really doesn't become a self-sustaining. It has to, in many ways, become part of the support of the institution and belief in terms of what adult education does ultimately for feeding into their institution for future students that become the incentive. And part of that is also why we are looking at the performance funding for the adult education program is to continue to incentivize and to draw additional funds into our adult education programming. So beyond the WIOA Title II, which primarily funds adult education here in the state.
I'm sure you answered my question, but I'm good.
All right. Vice Chair Hawkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I might go off the reservation here just a little bit, this line of questioning. If you can't answer it, I promise you I'll bring it in at the end if you can get somebody back to me. How often do you work with the private sector to know the jobs that they're saying they need, those careers? How often do you hear from them?
I would say, thank you for the question, that is a constant dialogue that we have. And we do that in a variety of different ways, too. And the field also provides us that feedback as well. As they are developing their programs, they have technical advisory committees, technical councils that bring in employers to make sure that the curriculum that they are working with meets the needs of that particular business. And so if there's ever an issue that the curriculum is deficient, they can also propose changes to our frameworks, which we work with at the state level to adjust and to make corrections as needed.
Mr. Chairman, follow up. How often, in knowing what the industry needs, do we seek the institutions that could teach get those careers going? Is that something we would direct, or are they meeting with the institutions also? I'm trying to figure out how this works, and then I'll follow up with a question on that.
Sure. I would say the answer is both, right? So the field provides feedback to us, but we also come in contact at the department with various industries, whether, for example, when we have our accelerators or we're working with our apprenticeship providers, and there may be the establishment or the creation of an apprenticeship program or a pre-apprenticeship program. We have our ATRs that are across the state. We have 9 different districts that work with those particular industries in developing the standards and submitting them to the state so they can be registered so we can have those workforce training programs available to them.
And Mr. Chairman, last one, promise this will bring it in for the landing while I'm asking. So today is Space Day here, everybody that has come into my office over the last couple of weeks that community college, anything like that, everyone has a nursing request idea and why they should get funding. Space Day today, I'm hearing from these different agencies, ULA and Boeing and Harris, all these different people. It's not, they've got plenty of engineers. They don't have the specific type of welding they need, metal benders, the electric people that can pull the wire and specifically do what they need. Alabama started a program, and so has Colorado. We want to keep what we have here, having that industry here. How do we get those programs started here in Florida to meet these thousands of jobs they're talking about that we need?
Yeah.
Recognize.
Yeah, great question. I can tell you that just this last summer, we had a Space Coast convening. The department did that. Senior Chancellor Henry Mack, myself, Chancellor Hebda, were involved in that to meet with industry partners, LEAs, to address the very question that you have, is to make sure that we do not have gaps in our training programs relevant to what is needed in all levels of the particular organization. So with that, we had a significant investment from the state that included both job growth grant dollars, cybersecurity dollars, apprenticeship funds as well, to establish and develop those particular programs that were identified by industry. We know it's a constant challenge because as this state continues to grow and develop, we know that there are more industries that are coming in. The Space Coast is growing in exponential numbers. And so it is a challenge to keep up with that, but I can tell you those dialogues are happening to that point, and the state's made significant investments in that, to its credit.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you. All right. Great question. Anyone else? All right. I sure appreciate your time today. That was an excellent presentation. Thank you. Folks, this concludes our committee agenda. Is there any further business before the committee? All right. Seeing none, Representative Cross moves we rise. Meeting's adjourned.